SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. Listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well. And the long haul comes to an end at Keeneland today. The sale concludes. It hasn't been great. I saw and read Sid's piece last night on TDN, kind of tying up all the loose ends, and when the dust settles today, and you know, you heard from Bo Lane on Wednesday, there's going to be quite a few unsold horses. Obviously, a clearance rate, you know, just over half. So, top end strong, middle iffy, low end rough. And we'll see how things shake out. You got Timonium yet, and more. So, some people taking them home, get them going toward their 2-year-old careers. Others will move into training for 2-year-old and training sales opportunities next winter. The big sale concludes today. All right, so hope everybody involved, consigner, buyer, breeder, is coming away all right. Coming away, a lot of people probably aren't coming away whole, but at least live to fight another day. How about that? All right. Meanwhile, on the racetrack, we've got a huge weekend, just unbelievable, and we'll cover as much of it as we can fit in these 3 hours, and actually the front end in about 10-12 minutes. We'll welcome Milt Toby at the end of yesterday, as the story started to emerge about the Kentucky Supreme Court and the way they ruled on, I mean, a case that just has ground along, for an extended period, people seem like they think this could create great turmoil. That might not be the case at all. We'll find out. From Milt, who, of course, in addition to his terrific work as a nonfiction author, particularly of racehorse biographies, Milt is an attorney and a prominent one, and specifically an equine law expert. And not that per se, you know, ties him directly to this ruling on the paramutual aspect of the machinery. There's a bunch of things to hash out here, and I didn't want the weekend to get started without addressing this, because it's obviously going to be important, and there's long-term ramifications. There's some perspective that this will help pave the way for wider gaming expansion in the state. We'll see what Milt says. He needed overnight to read the ruling and gain a handle on what it means short-term, intermediate, and long-term. So Milt Toby starts us off today, and then we're going to dive into all of the stakes action. And not just stakes action. There's a bunch of maiden races that will undoubtedly prove important as the season goes on. There's no I'm sure there actually. I bet you there is this weekend and over the next couple of weeks some maiden winners that find their way to Keeneland for a Breeders' Cup assignment. You know, you got plenty to choose from when it comes to the juvenile set, dirt, turf, sprint. So keep an eye on the maidens. We'll ask everybody what they're tracking. Let me give you an idea of what's involved. In fact, give you the rundown. Mary Rampolini is going to join us after Milt, and Mary will actually take us to Sunday for Remington and the Oklahoma Derby, the Remington Oaks, the Remington Green, and the everything, but particularly the two graded stakes. We'll catch up with Mary on some other topics as well. You know, Louisiana Downs, they had to cancel. What was it, Tuesday? Tuesday they canceled, I think, the last three races. And then on Wednesday, which was going to be the last day of the meet, they canceled the whole card. The weather rough. So they're putting those two cards together, and they've made an 11-race card for Saturday. I saw where Mary wrote up about that. So Mary Rampolini, then Jay Pridman, top of hour two as Santa Anita kicks off. And wow, you got some weekend the next 72 hours at Santa Anita. Should be terrific. And nobody's going to miss the fact that, you know, last week was postponed because two stakes today, the Chillingworth and the Eddie D, right mid-card, so 6:12 Eastern time for the Chili and 6:43 for the Eddie D. That leads into Saturday's card, which is just, you know, chock full. You got the two big two-year-old races. You've got the heavyweight matchup. And I'm not going to just limit it to the two Baffords, Maximum Security and Improbable, because that's not how it always plays out. It very well may be one or the other. However, the horse of Miguel Silva's off of the Charlestown win, Sleepy Eyes Todd, 12-1. Plus, you got Samantha Siegel, who won another race yesterday. I don't know if you saw that. Samantha with another winner. She's had a steady beat of wins. But take the 101 and mid-court. So five of them, but a nice group of five. The John Henry on Saturday as well. The Rodeo Drive for the Phillies and Mares going a mile and a quarter on the grass. And then they drew the Sunday card, and we got plenty more to keep you occupied at Arcadia on Sunday. The Zenyatta early on in the card, and Fighting Mad will try to extend her win streak. Hard Not to Love in there. How about Proud Emma, Peter Miller? Peter Miller well represented in the stakes action all weekend. Simon Callahan from Mrs. Bamford with Harvest Moon and Hang a Star. Cruel Jack. Then you've got the late afternoon action, the Tokyo Cup, going a mile and a half, and there's one other. I'm missing a stake, the sprint. Where's the sprint? There's the sprint, going as the eighth, and the sprint, both the Vosburgh and the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, and of course the Vosburgh was dented up with the volatile injury and retirement. But again, you got some nice sprinters coming together here. How about Collusion Illusion? Yeah, from Mark Glatt and Flagstaff in here, Sadler, CZ Rocket, Miller, Giant Expectations. And in fact, the other day, what were we talking about? New York Breds, Fish Out of Water New York Breds, and Giant Expectations is one of the ones I was thinking of. Then you've also got Desert Law for Carla Gaines and the Harris team. So three more graded stakes on Sunday. So it's a absolute corking weekend out west. All right. So Jay Pridman, got a got to take us through everything. Plus, you know, the maiden races I mentioned. Scully will be by, and we'll talk to James, get some opinions. Just the one graded stake at Churchill, but they got 13, and it's pretty interesting. The 1 mile ACAC, and looking forward to some opinions from Scully. And the 8th and the 9th, in particular, the 9th is the ACAC, the 8th, a third-level allowance with some familiar fillies and mares going a mile. And those two races are part of the cross-country pick five with the Belmont action. So we'll get opinions from James as well. Marcus Hirsch is going to be by with kind of a game plan from DRF. And I think Marcus is going to bounce around and give you some stake opinions. Plus, I wanted him to report on the story from the other day at Arlington regarding next year and everything that is going on there. So we'll utilize Marcus for that. Hammer is back home, and he braved the heat to get out for a hike. He called me yesterday. He said it was plenty hot to be doing that. So we'll talk to Hammer and catch up with him. Nick Tamaro is kind of Nick is tied up. He's got a series of meetings today. He might get a little window somewhere, so we might have a quick pop in from Nick, but he can't. There was no period of time that he could really lock in, because he had literally a meeting now, a meeting at the top of hour two, and then a big sit-down meeting at the top of hour three. So I don't know if we're going to hear from Nick today. But we'll also hear from Mike Welch. And Welch, I wanted to reach Mike because of the Gulfstream action I mentioned. And you got the three Florida sire stakes for close to $1 million. You've got the two $400,000 two-year-old restricted group, and then you got the three and up Wildcat Air for $150,000. So $950,000 worth of Florida sire program races, plus another three stakes for $75 each. The Hollywood Beach, the Armed Forces, and the Aradir Peg. So nice. It for everybody that, you know, that wonders where the horses are, they certainly didn't have any trouble filling cards for tomorrow and for the weekend, because Delaware, again, I'll mention this, the owner's appreciation card that they put together with the series of $100,000 and $75,000 stakes, starting at about 2:45 with the fourth race, the tax-free, and the small wonder, and all of those. They've got a sequence of six stakes and all big fields. Virtually everywhere you look, haven't even mentioned this week that you've got the Iowa Festival that has got all the Iowa bred stakes at Prairie Meadows tomorrow as well. So Santa Anita, Churchill, Belmont, Woodbine's got the Ontario Fashion and the Bell Mahone, and Gulfstream, Delaware, Century Mile on Sunday, the Canadian Derby and the Mile, and some other supporting stakes. Mammoth's got the Violette, and then I mentioned Remington. So there's plenty to keep us busy. Before Milt Toby joins us here momentarily, let me give you a couple of recap notes from yesterday, because there were a couple of things that caught my eye. Pimlico got started and put on a good show to get things going. They got another nice card again today, kind of a nice variety of winners. Monday, be ready on Monday, because you've got a pick five carryover at Indiana Grand. And it took a couple of long shots. There was the seventh choice, Divine Quality, in the second leg. This was Anthony Cunningham and Sammy Bermudez, 20-1. Seventh choice out of a 8-horse field. And then you also had a big price in the fourth leg in the eighth race, a 75,000 claimer, $32.60. And that, those two prices were enough to Ricky Short sent out that one. And, yeah, 15-1, sixth choice out of nine. And so that was enough. And you got a $26,000 pick five carryover to look forward to Monday at Indiana. And, boy, in New York yesterday, if you were following along, thought that the results yesterday, you had a couple of very big numbers that resulted in a $36,000 pick five. Yesterday in New York, I think there must have been, well, 300,000 figure there were six, I guess, you know, either six winners or, you know, for 50 cents or six or seven, that were able to negotiate that sequence. Good job to those that scored. And, just to give you a quick feel. You had an 8-1. That horse of, I haven't seen the figure, but that horse of John Kimmel's that won the sixth race, Secret Love. That was impressive. That was a nice performance. This is for where is it? Another Not This Time filly. Not This Time just can do no wrong right now. These were New York breds. Very nice performance. And Johnny was aboard after talking to us. And that was one of the keys to the sequence. There was also a 12-1 shot for Tom Morley and Matt Shearer and partners. That helped. The 14-1 shot, $31 winner for Bruce Brown. Yeah, it was not easy. Then those three were the major items that tripped everybody up to result in a $36,000 payday. And at Churchill, we got to reach for Milt, and those Rachel tie-ins did not fare well yesterday, as it turned out. Airstream was just okay. It had been away, so maybe needed it. And it ran kind of evenly, but went off favored. Went off at a little under 2-1, and was fourth, beaten 4.5 lengths. But it was Distorted Moon, Ian Wilkes, who just keeps churning out winners, a little under 5-1 with Leperu. And there was also the Curlin that Steve Asmussen sent out for Stone Street out of Rachel's Valentina. Alejandro ran okay, beaten 5 lengths and change in his debut. So keep an eye. We'll watch back for them. And what else in there? Brett Calhoun, winner for the Wests. I saw this race live. Beat the 2-5 shot. Regal Beauty, Malibu Moon, and this a West homebred out of Book Review, who you might remember. And there was also the Allowance and the Late Action. Saw those last three or four races from Churchill. Segoy, the Caracanti, another name that's been bandied about all week. Michael Tomlinson for Blackout Racing, Normandy Farm bred colt. Wins the Allowance and won with authority. And then in that ninth race, you had the partnership of Cooper and Ten Strike with a nice performance. Swill took control early and cruised around in that maiden two-year-old group, going 7/8, and was really one in hand. So good racing yesterday leading into what should be a terrific weekend between Santa Anita opening today and Belmont and so on and so forth. Milt Toby is standing by, and when the alert came across, Ray Pollock was first with the coverage and sent out a tweet linking to local reporting of the Kentucky Supreme Court's decision. And the first person I thought of was Milt. And, you know, normally we have conversations with Milt about his latest book. In this case, we're going to let him flash his attorney chops and his equine law chops. Milt, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm okay. This piece of news, obviously, you know, kind of took everybody aback because it is, you know, after all the various challenges to the legalities, the appropriateness, whatever, however you want to describe it, it felt like this was, you know, one of these cases that, you know, had already been decided. Explain what transpired yesterday with that Kentucky Supreme Court ruling.
Sure, and you're right, Steve. I think this surprised a lot of people, partly because this is the second time that the issue of the historical horse racing machines has been before the Kentucky Supreme Court. In 2014, they issued an opinion, and the question that they were asked then was whether the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission had the legal authority to license the historical horse racing machines as part of their role as a racing commission. And the Kentucky Supreme Court at that point said that, yeah, they do. But they pointed out, the court pointed out, that there was no definition of what parimutuel racing actually is in any of the statutes. So I think the court in that early decision said, yes, the commission had the authority to license it, but they also at least implied that that authority was based on the historical racing machine games as being parimutuel wagering. They didn't get to that question in 2014. They did get to it in this decision that came down yesterday. And basically what they decided was that they built on the earlier decision, and in this case they defined parimutuel racing and determined that it didn't fit the HRH machines, that they weren't parimutuel racing, and therefore the Kentucky Racing Commission didn't have the authority to license them. And that's where we are now. You have to read those two decisions together, and the fact that the Supreme Court didn't in 2014 define parimutuel racing, and in this case they did, and found out that they don't fit into the current parimutuel scheme in Kentucky.
How much of this is strictly technical? Because you could even tell in the press release, as part of the, you know, the 16-page ruling, the court seemed apologetic. I mean, they acknowledged that this is too important of a piece of business already, you know, given, you know, $2 billion and growing, and, you know, the significance when it comes to, you know, the existing facilities. There's also the matter of whether certain brands of the HHR qualify under the guidelines. How much of this is technical, and let's merge into, you know, what the short-term and intermediate and long-term steps are?
Well, yeah, I think you're right, Steve. And first of all, I think the court is apologetic about having to rule this way, because they recognized in the opinion that horse racing and the historical horse racing is an important part of Kentucky's economy right now. But yeah, it's very, very technical, and it's technical because the court is interpreting a statute. And statutes are often imperfect because they are drafted by legislatures that have different interests, that sort of thing. And the courts only answer a question that they have been asked. In 2014, the question they were asked was whether the commission had the legal authority to license the historical horse racing machines. And the court said, yes, they do, as long as they're parimutuel. That was the question they were asked. That was the question they answered. The question they were asked in the decision that came down yesterday was, are these machines parimutuel wagering? And they said no. They're interpreting the statute very closely, but they also noticed that the statutes don't define parimutuel racing. So they looked at the Interstate Horse Racing Act, they looked at common law, they looked at some earlier opinions in Kentucky, and came up with a couple of issues that the horse racing machines, the historical machines, don't have that they defined as parimutuel wagering. And one of them was that the players at the machines aren't betting on the same race as the person standing at the next machine. And there also were issues about the racing commission adding money to the betting pools. And the court decided those two very technical things disqualified these machines from being parimutuel wagering. So there you are. And, you know, it's very technical, but it's more than semantics. It's applying the law as it exists. And that's the court's job.
As part of the technicality part of it, I saw where Frank Angst, in his reporting, in his level-headed reporting, as opposed to the sky is falling reporting, Frank got a quote from Pat Neely at Exacta Systems, and they respond to, you know, to this as saying that they have the system, the, you know, the mechanics in terms, I guess, of the algorithms, you know, within the machinery's pay scale, essentially its payoff response, that will address the definition of parimutuel. So it feels like there's going to be some of that kind of back and forth that's going to happen, you know. And of course, the Bible thumping lunatics are you know, they're ready with their pitchforks and torchlights to burn down Kentucky Downs and Ellis Park. You've seen these antics and the back and forth melt for over a decade. What do you think happens, you know, immediately, and how much of this also opens the door for the further gaming expansion that Frankfurt is going to have to address at some point?
Well, there are actually two good questions there, Steve. And the first one is you know, everybody is bemoaning the fact that the Kentucky Supreme Court has said that under the current statute, these are not parimutuel wagering. But they also gave us and gave Kentucky at least two paths forward. One of the ones that you've already brought up is you can change the machines. You can change the machines, and I assume you can, although I have no idea how they work, and I'm baffled by my cell phone. But you can change the machines to fit the way the Supreme Court defined parimutuel wagering, and they were very, very specific in that definition. Or they also pointed out that if you don't want to do that or can't do that, then you change the law. And they were very clear that the legislature has the power to do this, and it should be the legislature's choice and the choice of the people of Kentucky rather than a court to make that change. So there are two ways to deal with this moving forward. So I don't think it's immediately fatal. The what was really interesting, though, is the court told us what the historical racing machines aren't. They're not parimutuel wagering, but they didn't tell us what they are. You know, looking at the definitions, it sounds a lot like they might have more in common with casino games. Which brings us to the question that we faced in Kentucky off and on for a long time. Do we want casino gambling? I don't know the answer to that. I know that it's always a heated discussion in the legislature. So I don't know whether that would be a way out or not. But also, you know, legalized sports betting has become a very big deal since the U.S. Supreme Court said that was legal. But I'm not sure these machines fit into the notion of legalized sports betting as we understand it, which is, you know, betting on a basketball game that you can watch at the time. So I'm not sure either of those options are viable, but the legislature can do something. And if the vendors of the machines can do something, that might be the quickest fix.
From a recourse side for the entities that are operating HHR parlors, And at this point, that, you know, that is a, you know, a wide array. I mean, Keeneland, Churchill, Kentucky Downs. They're building a entire new racetrack at Turfway. You know, on the basis of you know, these revenues. What do the legal teams at those entities, what do they do immediately, Milt?
That is another good question. Because we're talking about the Kentucky Supreme Court, that's the highest court of appeals in the state. So there's nobody to appeal to from this decision. There, you may have the option of asking for the Supreme Court to look at to review the decision. They almost never do that. That is not likely to be a viable issue. The other question, I guess, would be to start another legal battle in the lower courts. And when you're talking about statutes, you're really talking about the circuit court in Franklin County, which is where the capital of Kentucky happens to be. So that's where those cases tend to always come up. There might also be an option to do something in federal court. You know, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't really know what the options are. I think it's too early to know what legal recourse there is, if there is any. There may not be. You know, the Supreme Court in Kentucky is, they're not last because they're always right, but they're always right because they're last. So there may not be a legal recourse, or at least not a viable one.
Tangentially to this, the Supreme Court remanded the Family Trust Foundation their suit against the KHRC and the Thoroughbred Tracks back to Franklin Circuit Court. And essentially, what, pushing that back to square one, then, you know, utilizing, you know, whatever the ramifications are of their ruling on this particular element, it sort of reevaluation of the case with this ruling in hand. Is that what that does to the Franklin Circuit Court?
No, it doesn't move them back to square one at all. The language of the Supreme Court's decision was very clear. They said that they have reversed the Franklin Circuit Court's opinion, which said that this was legal parimutuel wagering, and they've remanded it back to the court to enter a judgment consistent with the Supreme Court's opinion. So basically, since the Franklin Circuit Court made the original decision that was appealed, they're sending it back to them to issue a new opinion that is in tune with the Supreme Court. So they aren't going to start the litigations again. The Supreme Court has sent it back to allow the trial court to come up with a new opinion that matches what the Supreme Court has told them to do. And that'll take a little while, but it won't take very long.
Well, you know, there's an assortment of opinions and responses from, you know, most of the affected parties, and I thought that, you know, the comment from Governor Beshear needed to be included, because from the State House, Beshear said historical horse racing is an important part of Kentucky's economy, supports jobs, and contributes $21 million to the state budget. We are working with various partners to find a path forward. I think we'll all get behind Andy and let him go to bat here on everybody's behalf.
Yeah, absolutely. The uncertain thing is who these partners are and what a final path forward could be. You know, that's going to take some negotiating on everybody's side, and it's going to take some compromise on everybody's side, I think. And that's hard to come by when we're talking about something as charged as gambling in Kentucky.
Well, something tells me that the new facilities down in Corbin the building of the $100 million racetrack at Latonia, and the revitalization of Red Mile. I something tells me that everything involved in those entities tips the scale in the favor of a happy resolution.
I hope you're right about that, and I agree. But it was ironic that the Supreme Court's decision came down, what, two or three days after Keeneland and its partners announced the plans for the Corbin track.
Right.
And you have to figure that historical racing played a big part in those plans.
Now, and the support, and I'll reach out to the people that I know at Exacta Systems next week, and we'll get some of the technicality aspect, because you know their response is that they do have the right answer that makes the definition, that fits the definition. So we'll get some feedback from them as well. But Milt, I needed you absolutely to bring your attorney chops to the table.
Well, I appreciate the chance to chat about this. It really is. It's a fascinating time to be involved in racing in Kentucky right now.
Yeah, there's been a couple of unsatisfactory decisions legally the last couple of days in the Commonwealth. Let me ask you about what your latest project is, and on the heels of just the parade of just fabulous books, going back to Dancer's Image and Noor and Canonero and Taking Shergar. What's next on the agenda?
I am in the midst of another project for the University Press of Kentucky.
Nice.
I'm putting together a social history of performance-enhancing drugs in thoroughbred racing.
Interesting.
And it's gotten sidelined a bit because almost all of the archives I needed to visit are closed because of the pandemic right now. So the book is basically going to cover the last 100 years, because getting back to the 30s and the 20s, that's when you could actually test for some drugs. That's when the saliva test came in. And that's really the start of the drug war that racing is still fighting today. So, the book, I hope, will be out in early 2022 because of the delays with getting some of the research material. But, it's an interesting topic, and I think it's timely, particularly with the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act perhaps finally getting approved in Congress.
A couple of things. Is there a working title?
There have been a variety of titles. I'm sort of leaning right now toward, and this is actually the UK press that makes that final decision, I'm thinking about calling it Unnatural Ability, A Social History of Performance-Enhancing Drugs in Thoroughbred Racing as a subtitle. But that's still up in the air.
Unnatural Ability is very good. That's what we're going to... As if this was a Hollywood production, that's the working title that we're going to use. Milt Tobey's Unnatural Ability. Well, you got an unnatural ability yourself of picking topics that are engaging, and it was notable. I thought, Milt, for those that haven't read Dancer's Image, I did invoke it leading up toward Derby. Given some of the same social backdrops that were involved and came to bear on Peter Fuller, much as some of the pressures came on Greg Harbutt and his partners.
Mm-hmm.
From that standpoint, the things that may or may not have played into, the way Dancer's Image, how the case was handled, and Peter Fuller's, his leanings socially.
Yeah, there are a lot of strange things these days.
Well, we always enjoy talking to Milt Tobey, and got to also voice appreciation for the University of Kentucky Press, because they you know, their commitment and frankly their survival needs to be toasted, because it was under duress from the previous administration in Frankfurt. So the fact that it continues on and thrives, and Belt will look forward to this. I think you latched on to another winner.
I hope so. I'm sorry that it's going to be so long getting into people's hands, but you can't argue with the pandemic.
Well, in the meantime, they can keep themselves busy with taking Shergar and Noor and Dancer's Image, and if you don't have going all the way back to the, you know, the Thoroughbred Legends series, Milt did Ruffian, and if you want to read the somewhat dry Milt Toby versions, his legal equine law books, if that's your preference. But when it has Milt's name on it, it's always engaging. Milt, I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the good words, Steve, and take care and stay safe.
Milt Toby, everybody. You can follow Milt on Twitter, Milt Toby, and you go to any bookstore in the sports section when it comes, or the legal section, but order his books. I mean, we've talked about every one as they've come out, and except for Ruffian, which predated, you know, goes way back. Those are those great little Blood Horse Library books that must be, I don't know, 20 of them, give or take.
Some, yeah, 20, like, I think.
20? There you go. And all kinds of sports writers and some people that weren't even really, that really weren't even necessarily known as turf writers, right? That wrote, yeah, a couple of them.
Yeah, it's a great collection of, they're easy reads, and they're about horses that everybody ought to know about.
Exactly, and you know, Aladar Affirmed, The Rivalry. I mean, there's some of those treatments. I'll send out a link on that for those that aren't familiar. I'm sure there's some new players and fans that aren't really sure what we're talking about. The Thoroughbred Legends series, Milt Toby, everybody, and his legal expertise, as well as his new project. Milt, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Take care.
Milt Toby, and I'll send out a couple of different links for everybody. You know, Milt, we've been having Milt on the show for, I mean, the breadth of, I mean, it's got to be 10, 15 years whenever one of his books came out. And I think maybe one other time did I reach out for Milt for some legal expertise when it came to equine law. But he's got the Understanding Equine Law, Understanding Equine Business Basics, and also the Complete Equine Legal and Business Handbook. So if you're, you know, if that, those are areas that you want to know more, do a Milt Toby search and buy them all. Collect them all. Fill your bookshelf with Milt Toby tomes. We'll stay right here. Mary Rampolini is standing by, because I didn't want to let Remington's big day go on Sunday without visiting. And Mary, with some opinions and the advance work on Remington Park. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Mary, good. And haven't talked in a little bit, but you've got, there's always something keeping you busy. And in this case, the Oklahoma Derby on Sunday evening, 8:12 post time for the Derby. Earlier on the card, you've got the Grade 3 Remington Park Oaks as well, 100,000. And Kenny McPeak emptied the barn. Let's talk about the Oaks first.
Yeah, absolutely. He's very well represented here. He certainly has a strong year with those three-year-old fillies all around the horn, but coming in with three of the eight starters, and kind of a nice group for him. Let's see here. We've got the filly Evuvante coming out of the Alabama, after facing Swiss Skydiver last time. So I think she'll probably be one of the top choices here. She was second in the Ashland. She's got some graded stakes credentials. So I think she'll be very well received in this spot. Curls and Bows seems like an upcoming filly, upcoming daughter of Curlin for the McPeak barn. You know, she's won her last two. She's moving right along, and I think she'll like this move to a mile and a 16th. And, you know, she's a half to grade one winner, Dearest Tricksky. So she has a really, really nice pedigree behind her, backing her up. And also, it looks like he has Jeweled Princess in here. And she's finished first in her last three races, so she's a very sharp filly for him as well. Really a nice group of young fillies, and I think there's a Southern California shipper that will get good support in here, Paige Ann, for trainer Simon Callahan, who's come in off a third in the Torrey Pines. So a nice group of fillies here.
Well, and then on the local scene, on the local contingent, you do have Seattle Slang for Steve Asmussen and for Phoenix. This is a Tappet filly that was 600,000, and it took her a while to break her maiden, but things started to come together for her over the winter at Fairgrounds, and she broke through, and it feels like Asmussen's been very patient with her, and you know, she went through a couple of allowance tries and ran okay. The improved performance at Ellis in July, breaking through to get an allowance win, and then some, you know, good, what, August, give it about six, yeah, about probably about a 7 week, looks like about 7-8 weeks between starts, and she's been at Remington, and she's been there long enough to fire a bullet. Seattle Slang feels a little bit interesting here at 8-1 with Stewie Elliott.
Yeah, you know, just talking to Steve Asmussen last week, having hit his 9,000th career win at the Remington card, so it was my territory jurisdiction to talk to him, and he had mentioned this filly. We had talked about this filly being pointed for this spot, and yeah, she has been down in here working, like you said, and her dam, grade one winner, made $1 million, Seattle Smooth, so definitely has a license to be an exciting filly going forward for Phoenix Thoroughbred and Steve Asmussen.
Let's turn to the boys' race and the Oklahoma Derby, Grade 3. You know, the girls go a mile and a 16th, the boys a mile and an eighth. And we look outside to the presence of Dean Martini, 7-2, Brad Cox, 5-2 on Shared Sense, Asmussen with a pair in here, Code Runner, the longer price of the pair, 10-1, and Rowdy Yates, who, you know, has had a productive year getting, you know, minor awards in races, you know, like the Ohio Derby and the Ellis Park Derby. I mean, he's been in superfectas his last three. That also includes the trip to Saudi Arabia, where he tried that Saudi Derby Cup and actually ran pretty well. You know, he's been back. He's been just shy. I have some affection for him. You know, then there's the crazy story of the claimer, Avant Garde, who has gotten steadily better as the summer went on. And this is Jesus Lander for Gelfenstein, and going to get some attention there. Perry Martin of California Chrome fame shows up with a maker trainee, Momosa. Shared Sense, of course, we mentioned. How about Sallow down inside? Terry Brennan. And this is a Distorted Humor colt who might get a little overlooked.
Yeah, you know, I was just doing a little research on the race for handicapping, and I don't need to tell people this, but, you know, he's got nothing but dirt pedigree, Distorted Humor colt, and his dam was a grade three winner on the main track, and here he is undefeated on the grass. But just been talking to Terry Brennan earlier this summer off of this horse's efforts at Lone Star. They were considering the Oklahoma Derby at that point in time. The turf opportunities were in front of them. They took them, and they liked the mile and an eighth for the horse last time. And so the Oklahoma Derby was something that's been on their radar for quite a while now. So he is a very interesting horse. I find him very interesting. He's been training in Arkansas, at a training center in Arkansas, and he'll come in over, easy ship over to Remington.
Where is that that DMT? I assumed it was a training center, but that's not a designation I've seen that pops in my head.
Yeah, so that's in the Hot Springs area.
Okay.
In the Hot Springs area. So yeah. So he's been based there and has effectively shipped in from that training center, that facility into Lone Star and won. So.
Nice. Well.
Yeah. He's a very interesting horse. I agree with you. But it is a very nice matchup. You know, Rowdy Yates, your man Rowdy Yates. He's definitely a horse for course. He's 2-for-3 on the main track at Remington, a stakes winner at Remington, and I think obviously shared sense. I think he could go favored in here off his Indiana Derby win. Strong connections. Godolphin trainer Brad Cox, and then Dean Martini is the other graded winner in here off the Ohio Derby. I think the public will gravitate mostly towards those two, and I think Rowdy Yates will get good support as well. But the Avant Garde horse is very interesting, like you said, coming out of Florida and has done nothing wrong, certainly making a step up in class here, but he's certainly bred for it. His dam won the Delaware Oaks, so I'm very interested to see this horse does as well, like you mentioned, Steve.
Well, shared sense, maybe from a class standpoint, with the Indiana Derby win, had kind of a late rally going. It was way too late in the Ellis Park Derby, ended up fifth. But shared sense, you know, certainly, you know, showed signs through the early portion of the Derby trail season, and shared sense, 5-2 in here. Dean Martini, was also, a participant in the Ellis Park Derby and disappointed a little bit off of the Ohio Derby win. So, I mean, this is kind of your classic assembly for the Oklahoma Derby.
Yeah, it's a mix of generally speaking, this race draws from all over the map. And once again, that's the case here. And it's actually a really good handicapping race, I think, because there's a lot of questions surrounding the horses. Some of the horses that are in very sharp form are stepping up in class, so that's kind of interesting. And then you've got some horses that have performed well over the spring and are looking to recapture that. So, yeah, I think it's a good handicapping race.
Mary, I know the picks aren't in yet, but who are you gonna tab in here?
Yeah, I think I'm leaning, Steve, towards shared sense right now, based on just the fact that he was. Obviously, he's class, winning the Indiana Derby. And the fact that he was second to Art Collector prior to that race, I like that from him. And I just think he's a nice horse. You know, he's only made the 9 starts, and he just seems to be putting it together more and more. And they weren't disappointed in his Ellis Park Derby, just like you said. He was really closing. And I just like him a little bit. So
there you go. All right. How about some other topics on this card? We've got the 2-year-olds. Things get started with the Kip DeVille, and down the road the Springboard Mile. You've got 2-year-olds going a mile as well. Looking for to graduate in here. You got the Remington Green, which is always kind of a solid group. Brad Cox has got Mr. Misunderstood, who's trying to pick his head up a little bit in here.
Yeah, it's a good spot for him for sure. He looks good in there, and Cox has Vulcan in the 2-year-old race you mentioned. So Brad's coming in with some very nice individuals, and yes, Mr. Misunderstood is certainly the class of the DeBartolo is a grade 2 winner. One race I don't want to leave out, and I really want to draw people's attention to, is the David Vance. Sprint, great race, came up really strong. We've got, Chief Cicatrice in there, and Share the Upside, who's a nice horse. Welder is entered, but he's in a turf stakes Friday night at Remington Park against Oklahoma Breds, and so he is expected to run there. Mr. Moneybags has been a really nice horse, 6-time stakes winner. He goes in this sprint. It's his second start off a layoff. And Hunk of Burning Love, who won the Governor's Cup earlier in the meet at Remington Park, is cutting back, really off back-to-back route wins at Remington. He's cutting back. So that David M. Vance sprint, which goes as the third race, starts out the stakes, the first of the eight stakes on Sunday, is really a strong race. And there's a special post I should mention, too, for folks of 3 p.m. Central on this 11-race card, which is one of just two Sunday cards during the course of the meet. The other is Springboard Mile Day in September.
This is a good race, even with Welder coming out. And I'm glad you mentioned tonight, because this evening, yes, you got three Oklahoma bred stakes, the Bob Berry Memorial, as well as that turf sprint, and also the Red Earth. So three stakes on tonight's card, which starts at 7:07 Central, and then Saturday, kind of a nice card before Sunday's big graded stake fest with the Oklahoma Derby and the Remington Park Oaks. Another horse in here that Seven Nation Army from Moquette is okay. But you brought up Broberg with Hunk of Burning Love, Chief Cicatrice, Shane Davis. I think, considering the pandemic, he's run in more places, and or at least has been entered in more places than any horse in the country.
He's been busy because he's been out in the Turf Paradise area. So yeah, he's been in a little more in the Midwest area for sure lately. And boy, what a nice horse he is! I'd be very interested to see what he does here, because he's worked very well over this track and has been targeting this for the connections. You know, Mr. Evans, Roy Gene Evans, is a Dallas based owner, and you know, this horse has been really a joy for the connections, for sure. So,
Mary, before I ask you just a couple other questions before we wrap up, anything of note to pay attention to in the Kip DeVille? There certainly have been some nice two-year-olds that have emerged out of it over the years.
Oh, yes. You know, I think Vulcan for trainer Brad Cox comes in very sharp, and I think folks will probably enjoy seeing Hewlin as well. He's kind of a nice two-year-old for the Asmussen operation. And the Heidel Bros, always connections to watch. He's a Tapitcher, which is kind of fun to see. And then I thought Game Day Play might be a nice horse for Tom Durant and trainer Brett Calhoun. He won a maiden race at Lone Star in his last start, and the horse that finished second to him came back and won the Texas Thoroughbred Futurity, the Colts and Geldings division there at Lone Star. So that kind of flattered Game Day Play a little bit, and he just seemed kind of interesting then there. Yeah, always good to see the two-year-olds. You know, this kind of starts the march to the Springboard Mile, which traditionally is a Kentucky Derby points race each December at Remington. So this is kind of a look, at least, maybe some of the horses that might go on.
Well, a very nice card Sunday, and I wanted to make sure people, you know, we always like to showcase Remington, a big fan, and I just enjoy the racing, and this was a good card that was put together. Mary, I also mentioned that you caught the note during the week that the canceled card Wednesday at Louisiana Downs, and they also lost those three races on Tuesday, and they're going to make it all up and wrap up the season on Saturday with a big 11-race slate.
Yes, that's right. They were able to transfer those races. So if you've done your homework, those races were transferred over to a jumbo 11-race card on Saturday. They had a meeting and determined that was the best route to go. So the Louisiana Downs meet ends Saturday, and they will have a much earlier post than normal. They'll start at about 12 noon with that 11 race card, Steve. Noon Central.
And attention then turns to Evangeline.
Yes, let's see. We've got, unfortunately, Delta is still stalled because of Hurricane Laura. So that is kind of postponed indefinitely right now. And Evangeline has the quarter horse season going. And then, yes, Fairgrounds will be coming online for the Thoroughbreds in November. So, yeah, it's kind of for Thoroughbred racing action, it's kind of going to be a little bit of a lull right now unless something changes, Steve.
That's a that's a good point. Actually, I wonder, that's why I mentioned that if they're, you know, with Louisiana Downs ending and Delta, you know, dealing with the aftermath of the storm. Well, I guess what is it?
I think what you see October. Some of those Louisiana connections showing up in the Remington box here this last week. I will say that I just noticed that handicapping.
Well, that, I guess they're just going to have to. Yeah, they're going to have to make. They're going to have to make do. Because Lone Star's all quarters right now, right?
Lone Star is operating. Yes, the quarter horse meet right now. So yeah, there's not really any more thoroughbred racing in Texas for the rest of the year. That's wrapped up. So yeah, you're in a kind of a. You've got Zia Park coming online in New Mexico, but that would be kind of a. Kind of an out-of-the-box option, I think, for a lot of guys in Louisiana.
Huh.
And, you know, hopefully Delta is going to proceed and get ready. The casino is back open. They were able to get that back open. And even though there is damage to deal with, it's my understanding the barns were not damaged of any significance, you know, of severe significance. So that's good news for moving things along. They did lose their tote board in the storm. So they have some issues to deal with. But I think they're really hopeful, you know, in working to get back online as soon as they can. Certainly the whole state wants to see that.
All right. Well, Mary, I appreciate it. And, of course, Mary covers everything, even did some of the advanced work. We're going to talk later to Mike Welch about the Gulfstream card. Mary did some of that as well. Mary, I appreciate it, and be watching Remington on Sunday night. We'll talk soon.
Steve, thanks for having me. I appreciate it so much.
Not at all. DRF Rampolini, who from New Mexico to Charlestown. Mary covers Mary catches you know all the things that you know that just nobody else gets to. It's amazing how much Mary's on top of. Let's step away, take one of two breaks this morning, and come back. Jay Privman standing by as Santa Anita gets off the blocks today. And it's going to be an intense 3 days of racing at Arcadia. Jay Privman joins us next. We'll get a little Preakness in there as well with Jay after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.